welcome to Brighttown Broadcast News for Wednesday, January 15th, 2025. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, the founder of Brighttown.com, publisher of naturalnews.com, etc. And it's always fascinating to me when globalists take off their masks and openly talk about the advantages of depopulation. And here's a great example. So we have the BlackRock CEO in this video clip here explaining how countries that are suffering depopulation actually have an advantage because they will be able to more rapidly replace their shrinking labor force with robotics. Here we go. Mask off. Give this a listen.
I could argue in the developed countries, the big winners are countries that have shrinking populations. Okay, that's something that most people never talked about. You know, we always used to think shrinking population is a cause for negative growth. But in my conversations with the leadership of these large developed countries that have xenophobic immigration policies, they don't allow anybody to come in, shrinking demographics, these countries will rapidly develop robotics and tech and AI and technology. And if the promise, I didn't say it's going to happen, but if the promise of all that transforms productivity, which most of us think it will, we'll be able to elevate the standard of living of countries and the standard of living of individuals, even with shrinking populations. And so the paradigm of negative population growth is going to be changing. And the social problems that one will have in substituting humans for machines is going to be far easier in those countries that have declining populations. And so for those countries that have rising populations, the answer will be education, and so rapidly develop. You know, for those countries that do not have a foundation of rule of law or education, they're going to be left. That's where the divide's going to get more and more extreme. And unfortunately,
well, like I said, mask off. Huh? See, they're openly bragging about or talking about the advantages of depopulation. So it's going to be, you know, much easier to replace those countries with robotics. That's what he's saying. And let there be no doubt among all of you listening, and I've offered this warning several times, and I've had a lot of private conversations with people about this very point of much of humanity being replaced by AI systems, AI software or agents replacing white-collar jobs, i.e. desk jobs, computer jobs, and then AI robots replacing a lot of labor jobs, a lot of blue-collar jobs, including in agriculture. And the response I get from most people right now is, oh, well, they're not going to replace my job. And I hear this from people who are graphic designers or video editors or screenwriters or journalists or attorneys or, you know, what have you. And they don't get it. They don't get it. And I tell them, no, that it's going to replace your job too. You know, like, tell me what you do in your job. And sometimes they tell me and they describe a process. Well, I like somebody who works as a paralegal at an attorney's office. You know, I handle the client emails and then I help interface between the client and the attorney. And I bring up templates of letters from the attorney, and I fill in the client information and I send it to the client, and then I send that over to billing and add the billing. And I'm like, yeah, you just described exactly what an AI agent can do right now on your computer without you. Like, the process you just described is proof that your job is obsolete. And they're stunned. They're stunned. And maybe some of you listening are stunned as well. Or sometimes I hear people say, well, the AI systems can't do creative things. I'm a creative person. And yeah, I get it. I'm a creative person too. I love making art, writing music, you know, doing documentaries, stuff like that. And as you've heard me talk about, AI can create create music. AI can create vocals. AI can create photos, videos, everything. There still needs to be a person to tell the AI what to do, but that's a prompt engineering role. Like, I don't have to be a graphic designer in order to create awesome graphics now. All I have to do is tell the AI engine what to do. And so people who are graphic designers, who are experts in Photoshop, for example, and After Effects and Adobe Creative Software, typically, they have a set of skills that has been very valuable and very useful up until the moment. And now those skills, that whole software suite from Adobe is about to become obsolete. You will not need Photoshop to alter photos. Even right now, you don't. You just upload the photo to AI and tell it what to change, and it changes it. It's like magic Photoshop. You know, it does whatever you want. You can even say, hey, you see the person in the photo? I don't like the color of the dress she's wearing, let's say. She's wearing a red dress. Change it to a purple dress. Boom. It's a purple dress. You know, you don't need Photoshop. You don't need software anymore to do these things. So it's not a question, really, for most people. It's not a question of, will AI make your current job obsolete? The answer for almost everybody is, yes, it will. The real question is, how would you elevate your role in society, in your job, in your life, in order to stay on top of AI automation so that you don't get thrown into the depopulation category, which is what the globalists are doing. Now, the interview I have for you today is with Dane Wigington of Geoengineering Watch, and he has a rather ominous message today. Yeah, even I got a little bit blackpilled by Dane Wigington today just interviewing him. And he says our planet it's on a path of total demise here. The biosphere, human civilization, cannot survive on this current path of destruction. And so he is warning that we have to change course. And I think he's right. We do have to change course. But the question is, or I think the observation is, that globalists are greatly enjoying the depopulation ramifications of these disasters that are happening, for example, some of which appear to be engineered, obviously. The globalists are enjoying the famine, the food scarcity, the wars, the economic collapse that they are engineering, the debt collapse, etc. Why? Because it achieves depopulation goals, which you just heard the BlackRock CEO at the World Economic Forum, the WEF, say, well, this is an advantage. This is an advantage. Now, one of the topics that I mentioned to Dane Wigington in this interview, which I think is very important to consider, and I mentioned this the other day, is that your government needs power in order to power the data centers to pursue AI research in order to try to win the AI arms race. They need every kilowatt hour they can get. And you, as a consumer of electricity, and I'm a consumer of electricity, we are viewed as, now by our own governments, we are viewed as threats to the security of the state by the mere fact that we are using energy. Just the fact that we are using energy makes us an enemy of the state. Understand that. And now you will understand what BlackRock speakers are saying when they say depopulation is an advantage because it makes it easier to bring in the robots. That's what they're saying. It's an advantage from their point of view to wipe out all the people in advance, and they don't have to worry about uprisings and revolts and voters. You know, they hate voters, that's for sure. I mean, look at what's happening in Europe. In Romania, they just nullify elections that they don't like. They're going to do the same in Germany as well. They did that in the United States in 2020. Trump won that election, but it was just stolen by the Democrats, obviously. So they can't wait to get rid of as many people as possible and then sweep in with the robots and the software agents. And that is the transition that you are seeing right now. This is not theoretical. It's not a theory. It's what's happening. This is what's happening in California. This is what was happening in with the storms in North Carolina. Geoengineering is a big part of this. And my guest today, Dane Wigington, talks about this in great detail. You do not want to miss this interview today. It's critical. Now, the gullible masses who believe their governments would not kill them off, they will be the first to be exterminated. Seriously. And have you noticed over the last, 5 years, how many gullible people who did what they were told, who followed government orders, have you noticed how many of them are dead? Seriously. I'm sorry to be so blunt about it, but that's just the truth. Do you remember my song, Vaccine Zombie? I originally released that, I think it was 2011 or 2012, whatever it was, and I have reproduced that song now using AI. I've got a new music video that'll be coming out, I don't know, in a couple of weeks. But there's one of the sections of the lyrics in that song says, I always do as directed, like the media covertly suggested. You guessed it. I finally gave in and confessed it. I'd like to have my body and my brain medically molested. Don't want to be arrested, so I don't protest it. I give another pint of blood just to test it. I'm not taking those herbs, I detest it. Just give me more drugs that are going to be ingested. At least I think that's how it goes. I mean, I wrote the lyrics, and that's actually a pretty complex rhyme right there, by the way. But the point is, for the people who are going to kill themselves off over the next few years, or who already did by being obedient to government, they might as well have tombstones that just say, I obeyed. I obeyed authority. I believed the media. I believed Big Pharma. I trusted the FDA. That's what the tombstones will read. And again, you and I both know a bunch of people like that that are already dead, don't we? And understand that what globalist governments are doing right now is they are formulating scenarios where they make it easy for people to say yes to self-extermination or self-elimination. They want people to say yes to infertility. They pushed LGBT and transgenderism agendas to reduce, you know, fertility and people having babies and families. I mean, if you as a globalist, you know, evildoer, if you really want to make sure that the next generation doesn't have babies, just convince them to have their genitals cut off by doctors, huh? Call it gender-affirming surgery, and then push that through the left-wing media to try to normalize it. And then guess what? Yeah, no more babies because, you know, they cut off their genitalia. And that's the whole LGBT agenda has been about that, about destroying families, destroying reproduction, achieving depopulation, destroying humanity, destroying the culture, and also destroying morality and God. And the vaccines just went along with that to accelerate depopulation, infertility, you know, sudden deaths, all of that. And now they're rolling out storms and fires and floods and landslides and everything to try to kill more people off and block off the food supply. And there's more coming, folks. There's more coming. And if at any moment in whatever's coming, if at any moment you think, gosh, I'm so afraid, I should do what the government tells me, then you're dead. Even if it's Trump's government telling you something, if you are a sucker for Trump's administration, even, and I'm not criticizing Trump himself on this, I'm just saying, Trump's not in control of every sector of the government. And there might be some, you know, bird flu or Ebola or something rolled out, hemorrhagic fever rolled out, and some element of the government under the Trump administration comes out and says, everybody panic, eyeballs are exploding, people are, you know, burping blood out of their ears, everybody go to the hospital and get jabbed. And Trump might be, you know, deceived by his own administration. And he might at first, even go along with that. Oh, he might say it's a good idea. Maybe just to be safe, you should all go get the jab. If you follow that, you're dead. You're dead. And if the dead could talk, they would tell you that right now. The dead from the last 5 years, if they could zombie up out of the graves and talk, they would tell you, don't follow authority. Because look what happened to me. You know, they're dead. So your number one survival strategy from here forward will be to maintain the presence of mind so that you can say no to everything that your government, your media, the tech giants, the CDC, the FDA, the Surgeon General, all of them, anything they tell you to do, your first response as a survival mechanism should be, I'm going to consider the opposite. Your very first response should be, hell no, hell no, hell no. I want to live. I don't want to die. I'm not going to do what they tell me to do. There's no other way to say it. I know this might sound blunt or harsh to a lot of people, but hey, if you're listening to this, you probably saved your own life sometime in the last few years by doing exactly what I just described. You probably said no to something. You probably said no to more jabs. You probably said no to, you know, going into the hospital and going under a ventilator. You probably said no to a lot of things. That's why you're alive. And of course, many of our fellow Americans, or wherever you're listening to this, many of our fellow citizens did not say no. They said yes to the government, and they're dead. Now, as you know, I'm working on an AI language model that will be released free of charge on March 1st. You'll be able to download it from brighteon.ai, and you can go there now and enter your email address if you want to sign up to be alerted. This is a non-commercial, open source project. It will be licensed under Apache 2.0. For those of you who know licenses, that means that it is a license for unlimited personal and commercial use. So you can use this model for, well, read the licensing agreement, I suppose. But Apache 2.0 is a well-known license that supports open source development. And it means you can use it forever, unlimited personal and commercial use. You can use it in your nonprofits. Now, the reason I mention this is because whatever the governments tell you coming up, whatever the authorities tell you, whatever the news tells you, you can check with the language model to check if it's actually, if it resonates with truth or not. Now, the language model, you know, isn't listening to the news every day, but it's being trained on an incredible array of knowledge about vaccines and virology, herbs, medicine, prevention, you know, disease prevention, the problems with nutritional deficiencies, the role of vitamin D, so many things. And you can ask it in plain language to help you think through things. You can use it as a research tool. Now, no language model is perfect, so you still need to check the results. But it will help you research ways, methods, decisions that can save your life. And that's why it's critical to get this language model into the hands of people before this depopulation agenda really accelerates into overdrive, which is exactly where it's going. So to summarize here, obedience to government authority is a death wish. And the only way to stay alive is to think for yourself, resist and reject the authorities, do not consent to anything they tell you to do. If they tell you you have to go to the quarantine center, don't go to the quarantine center. If they tell you don't take ivermectin, you might want to get some ivermectin. Like, literally do the opposite of what they tell you to do, and that's your survival strategy. That's how insane our world is today, that if you do what you are told, you probably won't survive. And that's a lot of people. That's probably half the population in the United States that just goes along and does whatever they're told to do. Even now, there are still people wearing masks in their own cars. Oh my God. Even today, there are still people lining up to take more jabs, More flu shots. Oh my God. Even to this day, there are Americans who have a lot of dollars in the bank and they don't have an ounce of gold. Can you imagine to have all that currency and no money? Wow. You're just begging to lose everything. But, I mean, we all know people like this, right? We all know people like this, and you can't reach them. You can't get through their thick skulls and inform them of reality. They're just resistant to reality. They really want to live in a conformity bubble, and they will until their last day, which may not be very far away, based on the fact that globalists want to achieve extermination of billions of human beings. So I've said before that it's easy to be hard to kill, but it's also hard to stop people who want to be easy to kill. I know it's kind of a tongue twister. It's easy to be hard to kill, meaning it's easy to have the knowledge and have a little bit of preparedness, and it's easy to say no to all these government demands. Mostly they just try to trick you into doing things, like trick you into taking a jab that might kill you, for example. But it's hard to convince people who are easy to kill to not be easy to kill, because that's their world. That's their worldview. That's what they believe. That defines them. They define themselves as being part of polite society. They don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to be on the fringe. You know, they don't want to be seen as extreme, so they're just going to line up and take the jabs, and then they're going to die. Or whatever, you know, the next thing is that the government tells them to do. The government tells them you can only use a certain number of kilowatt hours per day. You're on electricity diet, and they'll say, okay, we're going to follow the electricity diet. These are all the people who've been doing all this recycling. You know, we're going to sort out the plastic, and then we're going to sort out the metals and the plastic and the paper, and we're going to have all these different bins. And I know a lot of you have done that. Maybe you stopped doing it, but did you know that a lot of these recycling centers, you know, it's all a scam, right? They just take all those bins and they throw them back together and they incinerate them. at some of the centers, they do that. Not all of them, but some of them. They just incinerate the plastic. It's theater. It's recycling theater. I mean, how many hours have you wasted in your life sorting into different bins just because you were told a narrative like this is going to save the planet? No, it's not. It's all a lie. Not going to save the planet. They don't even care about what's in the three bins. They're just going to burn it all the same or throw it in the landfill. It's recycling plastic doesn't even work economically, by the way. And then at the same time in California, people are sorting out all their trash into different bins. Like, we don't want all this plastic. And then, you know, the government allows entire neighborhoods to burn up, 12,000 structures burn up and burn all the PVC material and release dioxins into the atmosphere, which falls on the food supply. Now everybody's eating cancer-causing dioxins. And well, what happened to the Save the Earth narrative? We were sorting plastic, but the government didn't have water in the fire hydrants. Huh. That's the same government that lectures you about you're a bad person if you don't sort your trash, but they allow entire cities to burn. Yeah. See, it's all theater, folks. I mean, the demands that you recycle, the demands that you take the jabs, the demands that you obey, it's all theater. It's prisoner training, really, is what it is. It's just seeing what can they make the prisoners do. What stupid little rituals can they make you go through? They're like government shaming rituals. To just shame the people and make you do stupid, meaningless things while thinking that you're saving the planet. And there are so many examples of that. It's just off the charts insane. Meanwhile, these same government leaders that tell you that you have to save the planet, they've been plotting on how to kill you, how to exterminate you. Their plan to save the planet is to get rid of you. But they tell you that you need to sort your trash. I mean, you see the levels of deception and evil in all of this? They're coming for you. They don't want you to use energy. They don't want you to eat food. They don't want you to take up space. They don't want you to respirate because you're exhaling CO2, which they say is evil. They don't want you to use air conditioning. They don't want you to, you know, heat your home in the winter. Nothing. They want you dead. And they openly talk about it now. That's where we are. So remember, obedience to government is death or suicide. And survival means withholding consent, saying no, and learning to think for yourself. That's the only way that you will make it through this. Please understand that the globalists are targeting the high-density population centers first, and they're targeting certain cities to burn them out. Lahaina, for example, where they want to build the 15-minute city, now Los Angeles, and now there's this mysterious toxic fog in many cities. So they're going after the cities first. And also understand that there will be a coordinated real estate collapse because of the mass kill-off of so many people. Demand for real estate will, of course, obviously plummet, and cities will shrink in size and budgets and so on, and there will be a financial reset and a great taking where the assets of most people, at least those who still owe the banks on those assets, like land and vehicles, etc., business loans, they will lose those assets. The banks will take them over, and then you'll have masses of impoverished people, many of whom were previously middle-class people. They will be homeless, impoverished, and then they will be forced into open-air prison camps. Gaza was the model for this, and the technology lab was what Israel did to Gaza to monitor and surveil and use AI targeting systems and AI analysis of phone texts and phone location, geolocation, metadata, and so on. All of that is going to be applied to the 15-minute cities that crop up in America and Canada and all over the Western world. And then, of course, these are going to be effectively, you know, die-off zones, where in order to get your food or in order to have your CBDC, you'll be required to take the jab, and they'll justify it by saying, well, people are getting sick from disease X or whatever. And then they'll have everybody take the jab, and then those people will die off over the subsequent years. And that's the plan, is just elimination through obedience. And you know, starvation, infrastructure destruction, economic collapse, etc. So as you and I survive all of this, as we navigate through this with our health intact, with our minds intact, with our wealth intact, if you have wealth and you get it out of dollars, you can preserve it. We will be watching this, and it's going to be something shocking and sad, tragic, epic, you know, biblical scale in terms of the destruction. A lot of people you know today will die because of this. And you won't be able to convince them, even to their dying day, you won't be able to convince them that they're participating in their own suicide because they are brainwashed beyond rescue. They cannot be reached. They've been trained like dogs to support their own destruction. And in order to survive this, obviously, you're going to need to be well-versed in preparedness and self-reliance and build local community and have a support network of people that you can work with and trade with and, you know, help support each other. And like I said, it's easy to be hard to kill when you have knowledge and you have the will to survive. So I don't want to say that it's doom and gloom for everybody. No, it's only doom and gloom for the willfully ignorant, those who resist knowledge. They will not make it. But you listening to this, you're going to make it just fine. It's not even going to be crazy hard for you because you're not going to end up in a FEMA camp. You're not going to end up in a 15-minute city. You're not going to end up having all your dollars wiped out because you've got backup systems. You're not going to end up taking the jab because you're not insane, you know, etc. And you can defend yourself with, like, you know, nicotine patches or ivermectin or lobelia or all these other things. You know about vitamin D, you're going to be fine. You know about gold and silver or gold backs. You know about, you know, iodine. You know about language models and decentralized knowledge. You're going to be fine. So if there's a positive takeaway from this, let that be it. You're going to be fine. You know how to get backup food supplies. You probably have a lot of knowledge in growing food and canning food, preserving food. You know, you've got resources. You've got knowledge. You're going to be fine. You're just going to be living in a world that's going to shrink in terms of human population. That's just what it is. And there's really nothing that you and I can do to stop that. I have no expectation of being able to change anyone's mind about any of this. My only goal is to reach those who already are red-pilled and to help them survive with knowledge and resources. That's my primary goal. There's a whole group of people out there you can't reach. They don't want to be reached. They don't want to be helped. They're a suicide cult. They believe in the climate lunacy and all that nonsense, and they're obedient, and they're not going to make it. It should not be our focus to spend time trying to convince people that don't want to be convinced. I mean, they don't really have the will to live. You know, you can lead a horse to water, right? But you can't make it drink. You can lead a human being to knowledge, but you can't make it think. It's the same. What can you do? You can help those who are already thinking. That's what I do. I think probably that's what you do. Those of you listening, we help each other. We help the people around us, and we'll have quite a community of survivors who make it through all of this. And also at the end of all this, if you think about it, there's going to be a lot fewer sort of stupid gullible people in the world. I'm not celebrating that. I'm not asking for that. That's just cause and effect. It's the Darwin Award. If you're gullible, you die. If you know how to think for yourself, you can probably live through this. So, woo, crazy times for humanity, huh? Crazy times. Well, it's about to get a lot crazier. We're going to jump into an interview with Dane Wigington here. And I do need to give credit to our sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store, that offers backup communications that are a critical part of being prepared. So visit them at SAT123.com. And of course, our store, HealthRangerStore.com, has the food supplies, nutritional supplements, laboratory tested, almost everything certified organic, personal care products without all the toxic fragrance molecules and fillers and colors and GMOs and all that garbage. We have honest, clean products at HealthRangerStore.com and many survival products, including our line of knives, machetes. We have a tomahawk made with MagnaCut, an incredible alloy, all made in Arizona, by the way, with Dawson Knives. So we've got a lot of resources for you. And then finally, go to rangerdeals.com if you want to see some of the third-party solutions that I have chosen to promote, because they are solutions for survival, like chlorine dioxide and ivermectin for pets and Shield Arms that makes custom Glocks and, you know, folding AR-15s and things like that. A lot of resources for you. De-Googled phones, all of that. You can find it at rangerdeals.com. And there's a discount code there typically. It's usually the word Ranger that will allow you to save money on all kinds of deals. We've even got the new beef sticks there from One Acre Farms that are really popular. People love those. So get yourself ready and prepared and, you know, mentally prepared for what's coming, understanding that what I've said here in this podcast is like 99% of the population is not ready to hear this. And yet this is what's happening. So, you know, a lot of people won't make it because they just can't psychologically come to grips with what's happening. They can never believe that their own government is trying to exterminate them. And if you can't understand that, you can't survive it. That's just straight logic right there. All right, so we'll proceed with the interview with Dane Wigington, and then we've got an interview tomorrow. I think I'll play the Michael Yon interview tomorrow. We've got an interview with Zach Voorhees coming up, the Google whistleblower. It's going to be a packed week, but enjoy this interview today with Dane Wigington. Take care. Welcome, everyone, to this emergency interview with Dane Wigington from geoengineeringwatch.org. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com, the Health Ranger, publisher of naturalnews.com. And Dane Wigington is the world expert on climate engineering, geoengineering, weather control technologies. And over the last just year or two, especially with the crazy storms in North Carolina and now what's happening in California, I believe that many, many people, maybe even a majority, are now realizing that weather control technology is not a crazy theory. It's a very real thing, and it is being weaponized and deployed against us, we the people. And no one knows that better than our guest today, Dane Wigington. Welcome, Dane. It's always an honor to have you on. I consider you a great friend and a champion for humanity. Welcome to the show.
Feeling is mutual, Mike, and thank you for your voice over all these years to address so many dire issues, and this one's certainly coming to a head, and you've been very instrumental in helping that to happen, so thank you for that.
Well, I really honor your work. I think that if human civilization is to survive, that the world needs to listen to your voice urgently. You know, the biosphere is in danger. But let's start with something really practical. These California fires, most people are not buying the official narratives. This looks like conditions were engineered in order to allow this to happen. But give us your take on not just the start of the fires, but then what are the inputs that are allowing these fires to spread and cause so much damage to the point where estimates are now from $250 billion to $500 billion of economic damage in California. What's your take?
First, for a very long time, actually since 2005 or 2006 in the U.S. West Coast, the climate engineering operations were ramped up to a point where they were radically affecting the hydrological cycle here. And that has, over that time, set the stage for the ever-increasing burn downs. In the case of LA being Lahaina'd, it's much, much more than just establishing the conditions. But you're right to approach it in that manner, because too many people get caught up on the source of ignition.
Yes.
And that can be any one of 1,000 different sources or methods. But what is establishing the conditions for these fires to burn with such ferocity? So when you have a now radically fluctuating hydrological cycle, drought deluge scenarios, when the rain that does fall is toxic, and we know it's toxic because we're testing it, elements like aluminum, barium, strontium, manganese, polymer fibers, surfactants, graphene. In the case of aluminum, we have peer-reviewed study to prove that aluminum not only kills soil microbiome, aluminum, as I know you know all too well, Mike, and your listeners do too because they follow you, but aluminum being toxic to all life forms, period, so it kills soil microbiome as well. But we know root systems shut down nutrient uptake when they encounter this toxin. So they're dying a slow, protracted death. And let's look at the areas burning right now. They've had, I think, 1/4 inch of rain since last May.
Oh my, that's crazy.
That is absolutely a direct result of climate intervention operations. And Mike, that's exactly the kind of preparation that is talked about in U.S. military documents that we found and located and posted at geoengineeringwatch.org that speak of using wildfires as a military weapon to prepare areas to be vulnerable to firestorms. We know these particles not only killing soil microbiome, but aluminum, as I know you know, is such an effective incendiary, aluminum nanoparticles, that it's the primary element in demolitions and thermite.
Wow, so, wait. So hold on, Dane. The guest that I just interviewed, Michael Yon, he told me in that interview that he was trained in special forces to use fires as the weapon of choice.
Certainly.
To target areas and destroy infrastructure.
I mean, certainly. Before we go further on that, for listeners that, and because this is, and I'll follow you in that direction. For so many people, that even the notion that those in power have any ill intent toward populations is just too much for them to gag down. And And that needs to change, because anybody who thinks those in power have our best interest in mind needs to wake the hell up.
Well, especially after COVID. I mean, for God's sake, how many times do they need to try to kill you before you realize what's going on?
Exactly. Exactly. And when we have, as I've quoted many times, the statements from former presidential advisor Zygmunt Brzezinski from Johnson all the way up to 2017, that he stated, quote unquote, on the record, with today's technology, is far easier to kill a million people than to control them. So again, for anyone at this point, with all the data that's available to us, to think that those in power, those who print the money, those who are truly controlling the strings here, that they give a damn about any of us. We're not just expendable to those in power, especially the U.S. population, many of whom are heavily armed. We're not just expendable to those who actually control the levers of power. We are a rapidly increasing liability to them. So thus, with that in mind, the preparations for what just happened, and it's ongoing in L.A., not just the drying out of the entire region, not just the coding of that entire region for how many months, I mean, the better part of a year, coding those regions with a dust, literally an incendiary dust. And now the winds, and that's very key. Many people are programmed to believe that nothing man can do could possibly affect surface wind flows. That couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah.
From just what people can see with their own eyes, let's pretend for a minute that what we see in our skies is just condensation. And I mean, let's really pretend, because it's not. It's a particulate dispersion. We have film footage of it happening, on nozzles visible turning on and off. We, as you know, we've taken aircraft altitude, top testing aircraft. This is a particulate dispersion, but let's just pretend it's condensation that's covering the entire horizon. That radically affects surface wind flows, because you affect convection. But now let's carry it to what is actually reality. These are electrically conductive particulates. And when you ionize the atmosphere, you make those particulates much more susceptible to manipulation with frequency transmissions, not just from weapons of mass destruction like HAARP in Alaska, but from ground-based networks like the NEXRAD network. So you can literally create atmospheric pressure zones. And when you create opposing pressure zones, the atmosphere wants to balance that out. So there's going to be a surface wind flow. And in this type of manner, they can and absolutely are creating surface wind flows. And the same is true in Lahaina. Mike, you remember in Lahaina, you had meteorologists call it an extremely anomalous high pressure zone to the north of Maui in that case. And you had an extremely anomalous low pressure zone to the south, Hurricane Dora, that had an almost record length track. So Dora's spinning counterclockwise, the high pressure zone spinning clockwise, and the gradient between those two, Lahaina was not in the direct wind field of either atmospheric pressure zone, but in the zone between the two, you create a wind tunnel. Thus, you create a blowtorch, a bellows effect. And that radically, because you're pumping air into the fire, it radically increases temperatures. And it's tough to escape. And I'll leave it with this, Mike. And even on top of all that, we are definitely seeing structures ignited on the inside before the fires even reach the structure.
Now, what are you saying?
This is all I'm saying, that we know in the case of smart meters, we know that they start fires. There are lawsuits because of it. It's not speculation. Your listeners can look this up. I was shown in the Carr Fire in Northern California. You might remember the Carr Fire name. Did a lot of damage here. It's where the huge fire NATO took place. And an affluent neighborhood that burnt to the ground here, an owner tracked me down to show me pictures when they were leaving the neighborhood. The neighborhood was evacuated. It was empty. The Carr Fire had not reached that neighborhood yet. Neighborhood was empty. And as they were leaving, they spotted and they were the last ones to leave the neighborhood. They spotted in their neighbor's front window flames inside that house. They took pictures of those flames looking in the front door. They showed me those pictures.
Wow.
Now, again, I have an electrical background. I work for Bechtel Power, the world's largest engineering firm. My home was on the cover of the world's largest renewable energy magazine. I mean, I do have a background here. And smart meters can absolutely positively ignite a fire, whether intentionally or otherwise. And as an example for this, Mike, let's consider how many pagers and cell phones were remotely detonated, killing how many people in the Middle East?
Yeah, well, thousands. I mean, yes, injuring thousands.
Yes, so they can do that. Anybody who thinks that they can't use a much larger and more capable instrument like a smart meter to ignite a fire, of course it's possible. And all they would need to do, if you had a fire progressing through, for example, Pacific Palisades, all that would need to happen is a few strategic ignitions in homes. And I've seen pictures of homes there with flames coming out the windows and no fire anywhere in the perimeter. Something's wrong here. And all they would need is a few strategic ignitions to carry that 100-mile-an-hour blowtorch through the entire region. And even if only one out of 10 actually functioned and caused a detonation, which takes time for a slow burn like that, they would need a very small success rate to actually of the individual ignitions to actually accomplish the overall objective. So I'm saying there's a lot of things wrong here. There's nothing natural about this. And there are things that are very scientifically provable. This is not speculation. And all of this, in order for anybody to even begin to digest this, it's imperative to remember those in power know they can no longer maintain the current paradigm. They're trying to not only thin the herd, as you know, with COVID, but they're trying to disrupt the herd's capability and life and functionability. And this is all part of the same puzzle.
Now, it seems to me like the ignition of these fires, you know, there are going to be ignition sources all the time, right? There are always sparks. Certainly. Because there's power lines and everything. Trees fall in power lines. Yep. So the ignition is not really my concern unless it's arson. If it's intentional, well, that's different. And it appears that some of these are intentional. But
I would agree.
It's the political leaders of California that created the conditions. And some would say through incompetence. I say sabotage, but I'd like your take on that. For example, you know, planning to not have water pressure in the fire hydrants, right? That actually takes planning. Or planning to divert rainfall to the ocean so that you don't have it in the reservoirs. Seems to me that there had to be a tremendous amount of deliberate planning to make sure that the fires could not be addressed in an efficient manner. Does that resonate with you?
I would agree. And on that subject, certainly it would involve the knowledge and consent of local officials. And Gavin Newsom is absolutely a tool for the powers that shouldn't be, period. As I've mentioned on our exchanges before, I had about a 45-minute presentation I gave to Gavin in his office at the Capitol and his top aides, and he certainly knows this is going on. Pretended to care at the time, but obviously his job is to cover this issue up, not to expose it. So when there's that kind of infrastructure issue, yes, I would agree. That's more local government at the direction, I would argue, of overlying power entities here. But in regard to the cutting off of precipitation, although Gavin certainly knows that's going on, those orchestrating that's above his pay grade. So we're dealing with those behind the curtain. And again, for anyone who thinks that the occupant of the White House is in control of anything, whatever their political stripe is, I would suggest a reality check, because the last occupant of the White House to really draw a line in the sand with those in power, and in his speech a week before he died, it made that very clear. I mean, it was a very profound speech, and they immediately took him out of the equation.
You know, and I'm glad you mentioned earlier that sometimes people underestimate the level of evil of the government operators, because, you know, people like Newsom, they're fakers. Like, they pretend to be good people behind the scenes. You know, they're demons. They're horrible. But I saw a map that is just shocking to me, that these fires happen to almost perfectly overlay the planned high-speed rail, where they need to put high-speed rail through parts of California. And I'm not saying that that's the reason here, but it's an eerie coincidence, let's say, that same thing with Hawaii. It's kind of like, you know, the mayor there was talking with the globalists about, hey, let's have a 15-minute city, which is a globalist, you know, project to try to control people, put them in basically a prison camp with no cars. And But in order to create a 15-minute city, they have to burn down what's there already. And there you go. There goes Lahaina. I mean, am I leaping too far on that? Or is there an element of truth? Or what do you think?
Yes. Yes. No, we're on the same page. First, let me back up on the, thank you for bringing it up to on people's gross underestimation of the degree of evil we're dealing with here. It is incredibly difficult to even begin to comprehend the depravity of those in power. And again, I stress that it's not just for them. Populations are expendable. They are a rapidly increasing liability, period. On the agendas and objectives, and there are many, and you named a few, and I'm with you on that. Although those agendas and objectives do exist, and at some level for some in the chain of power, that may be a part of this equation. Ultimately, on the current course, no one gets out alive. And that's not conjecture. That's a mathematical, statistical certainty if we remain in the current course. And so, again, an example I would give, Mike, is it's for those carrying out the types of agendas and objectives you mentioned, it's like the pirates on the deck of a sinking ship filling their pockets with loot. Not going to be much good for them for long.
No, that's the thing. I mean, we either make a decision to have a sustainable human civilization here, or we all die. And moving towards sustainability means we have to throw off these suicide cultists who are governors and mayors and sometimes presidents and sometimes, you know, high-level officials. I mean, they really are suicide cultists. It's like we're living under a suicide cult where in years past they would say, here, drink the Kool-Aid. Now they're like, you know, don't speak out while we burn down your cities. You know, it seems really insane to me.
Well, it is insane, literally. And as I've mentioned before, based on psychoanalysis of the type of individuals you're describing, they have a common trait. And that trait, based again on psychoanalysis, is a near total lack of comprehension as to the consequences of their actions, even to themselves. So you're correct. A suicide cult is correct. But we have the problem of the vast majority of society that is either actively or passively participating in the insanity.
Yeah.
Society, that people that don't want to disrupt their personal paradigm, they don't want to be ridiculed or ostracized from family and friends by acknowledging the truth. So let's all just pretend it's emperor has no clothes moment. I mean, at what point do we acknowledge it? When you can do what they're doing in our skies and people going about their life completely oblivious, when skies look like literally something from a Vin Diesel sci-fi movie and nobody notices, that's scary to me. I mean, we're caught between a clinically insane power structure, as you so correctly described, and a population that's hopelessly out to lunch at this point. That has to change.
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, that's what's the syndrome called where the prisoners become enamored with their captors? Stockholm syndrome, isn't it?
Stockholm syndrome, yeah. Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So that's a psychological phenomenon under which many humans are suffering right
so
now.
So correct.
Yeah.
Perfect analogy. Perfect analogy.
Well, go ahead. You want to go ahead?
No,
and talk
no. No, I just wanted to acknowledge that you hit that one right on the head. Continue.
Okay. So we're being held hostage by insane, power-hungry, greedy tyrants who have short-term goals, but not long-term goals of human sustainability. They weaponize everything. They weaponize big tech. They're going to weaponize AI. They're weaponizing weather. They weaponize the monetary system, the banking system, everything, the news, right? Everything. They weaponize medicine, pandemics, you name it, in order to harm people. And half the people being harmed are still worshiping their captors or voting for them in some cases. But censorship makes it difficult for people to break out of that, which is all by design. I mean, that's why your voice is so important, Dane, what you're doing and yours.
And I'm with you on every single point you just made. And that was a really essential analogy. And there's, again, of course, to rephrase it, those who cannot or will not face what we've just outlined, because they convince themselves that, quote, they, those in power, those who print the money, because that's where all roads of power lead to, those who print money with no basis to it out of thin air, control militaries, thus they control countries. So for many people, and I know you must have heard this before many times as I have, Mike, that, well, they wouldn't do this to themselves. They already have, and they continue to. And as we've mentioned before, the 2,400 nuclear detonations has contaminated the entire planet. They did Project Starfish Prime, Project Fishbowl, the detonation of hydrogen bombs in the magnetosphere, which we're still dealing with the consequences of today, but they did it anyway. They thought it could collapse the entire atmosphere. Did that stop them? No. We have Fukushima, right. Triple nuclear meltdown, no end in sight, no technology to fix it. We're building 60 more nuke plants right now. We have 442 online. They're putting some dilapidated, formerly decommissioned power plants, nuclear power plants back online for just the data processing centers. You've seen that, I'm sure, Mike. I mean, that's how desperate they are. So we're not dealing with sanity. And yes, they would do this to themselves. They already have.
Well, okay, let me bring in something really shocking here that you are really eminently qualified to speak about. I recently interviewed the Google whistleblower, Zach Voorhees, and he and I are both really on the cutting edge of AI research and building AI systems for humanity, decentralized systems. And what came out of that interview is a realization that the governments of the world that are in the race for AI dominance, they are now beginning to see that there's so much power requirements for AI data centers. And there's such, this is a death match of like whoever gets super intelligence first will dominate the world. And if you come in second place, your nation is obliterated. So there's a desperation to redirect all power now into AI. And these governments like the United States are beginning to see consumers' power consumption as a threat to national security. So any human being that uses air conditioning or heat or whatever is increasingly, you're going to see this more over the next couple of years, increasingly seen as a threat to the very existence of the country because of the dynamic I just mentioned. Go ahead.
No, I fully agree. Keep going.
Well, I want your take on that, like what that means when your own government sees you using kilowatt hours as a threat to the government's existence.
And they see us in many other senses as a threat to their existence as well, in many other circumstances. If we look at, let's go back to climate engineering and weave that into this. So in the case of competition between power centers globally, climate engineering is extraordinarily detrimental to all three primary forms of alternative energy, wind, hydro, and solar. So they are literally cutting off precipitation to regions that depend on hydropower that now have no power.
Right.
In regard to wind, what we see now, because as we discussed earlier, geoengineering absolutely has a very profound impact on surface wind flows. So now what we see globally is all or nothing wind scenarios. It's either hurricane force winds or nothing. I mean, of course, there's some in between, but as a whole, it's much more all or nothing. So in the case of a wind turbine, if you double the optimal wind speed, you get nothing out of that turbine because you have to shut it down or it will blow apart.
That's right.
If you cut the wind speed in half, you make 1/8 the design output rating. In the case of solar, how obvious is that? When solar radiation management means put toxic light scattering particles into the atmosphere to block the sun. That's what got me into this fight to begin with, Mike. As you know, I spent my life trying to get out of the smoggy, filthy Southern California skies and got here, completed my wilderness off-grid home, and immediately was losing 50% or more of my solar uptake from whatever these aircraft were emitting. I knew that couldn't be just, quote, condensation. That's what got me into this battle. So you have massive solar power installations that are producing half their design output because direct sunlight is being blocked from climate engineering. So they can control that spigot as well, not just the rain, but how much sun and how toxic that rain is. And then back to the power centers, they can control even within nation states how much power they can or can't make. So we're dealing with a very multi-front battle here.
Okay, so let me bring this in. as proof of the hunger for energy at the data centers for AI, Microsoft has contracted with none other than the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant in Pennsylvania. Okay, of course, famous for a relatively small leak of some radioactive water, I think back in the 70s, perhaps. But this, so we are told by our governments that, you know, nuclear power is too dangerous to build for us to use, even though nuclear power emits no CO2. You know, the waste product is very dense and very small compared to most other sources. And nuclear power can be scaled on demand, unlike wind and solar, which depend on, you know, external factors. But we're told we can't really have nuclear power, but Microsoft can have nuclear power. They did a 20-year contract to purchase essentially all the output. Let's see, 835 megawatts of power, equivalent to 800,000 households. Dane, my God, yep. This is going to go into the data centers to build AI so that America can try to win the AI superintelligence race and defeat China, while the rest of us are going to be put on kilowatt hours budgets that make us live in poverty, essentially.
With you on all points. I read the same report, and you know that people don't understand how much power it takes to operate these data centers. And I think data indicates a smaller data center, 20 megawatts, all the way up to a large data center, 100 megawatts, or even 250 megawatts or more. These are takes massive power plants to run one of these things. And I, again, this is a race to self-extermination on so yeah, many fronts, so many fronts, and so many people still, again, as you, the term you brought up was exactly on target, Stockholm syndrome. And it seems that many are so far comfortable believing that as they're on the front of the sinking ship while the back is underwater, and they're convincing themselves their half of the ship isn't going to sink, good luck with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we go on, let me just ask you to give out your web address, your social media accounts, channels, anything where people can find you and support you.
Geoengineeringwatch.org is our website. We're the largest in the world in this subject. I think we're at about 50 million visitors and counting. And we're also on Twitter. We have a Rumble channel. YouTube is Geoengineering Watch channel and Dane Wigington channel. All this can be found on our site. And I'm sorry, on our exact Twitter designation, I don't run those accounts, so I don't have that at hand. But we are on Twitter as well, and we are diversifying to Rumble and on other channels as well, Mike. So I'm so caught up with a lot of the research and dissemination that I apologize I'm not at the center of all our channel running. But we are on AM and FM radio stations too. We've been as many as 28 stations at once across the country that we pay for out of pocket, no commercials, no politics. And we're trying in every way we can to sound the alarm to the non-choir. And Mike, we took a lot of these radio stations. We secured them near military bases. We have billboards up. We have billboards up near military bases. They have to look at them every day they drive into the base.
That's great. That's great.
So we're trying, brother. We're trying.
Okay, so let me ask you then, in terms of solutions, let me set the context. And I don't know what your answer is going to be. Whatever it is fine. But we know that to produce food takes energy. To have affordable food takes affordable energy. We know that for an economy to thrive, it takes affordable, abundant energy. You are well informed on all the different sources of energy. If you were to be a policy advisor to incoming President Trump on what America should do in terms of its long-term sustainable energy supplies, what would you recommend?
I would have to divert to whatever we do or don't do. If we are unable to stop what's happening in our skies at this point, nothing else will matter. And when I say that, I'm not referring to centuries from now or decades from now. we are on an unimaginably short timeline at this point. And you're correct about the amount of energy needed to sustain the current paradigm. I don't argue that at all. And what I'm trying to point out is that the complexity and energy intensity of the current paradigm is such that once it can't go forward, it will free fall backward. And we are so close to that impact point right now. And we're focused at geoengineeringwatch.org on the biggest hole in the bottom of the boat, short of nuclear exchanges, nuclear war. And again, that's another sign of the insanity of those in power. I mean, we have enough weapons to exterminate humanity, what, several thousand times over, and we're building more.
Right.
How much sense does that make? But aside from that happening, and by the way, Mike, I think we've talked about this, but you have some circles in Washington openly discussing what they see as the, quote, benefit of a limited nuclear exchange to put enough particulate matter in the air to curb the thermal energy buildup on the planet. If that happens, if any nuclear exchange happens at this point with our already radically depleted ozone layer, and we're down, by the way, to about 30% remaining, not 30% gone, 30% remaining, climate engineering, single biggest factor there, not a hairspray can,
right?
Climate engineering. So if any nuclear exchange happens, that will, the ionizing radiation will strip away what's left of the ozone layer. Game
over.
Done.
We're done. Right.
No food. Yep. Yeah, and we're already looking at the plankton mortality, which we've talked about. No plankton, no people, single largest oxygen producer on the planet. We know from studying the Atlantic from 500 locations, plankton populations have plummeted 90% decline. We are through the guardrail.
Can I offer this and maybe nudge you into answering the following? I would suggest that we've lived under the suppression of a lot of energy technologies, such as cold fusion, low energy nuclear reactions. It's time to end that suppression because it's decentralized, cheap, clean fuel. Also, like micro fusion reactors that can power neighborhoods or that can power, you know, factories that, you know, don't emit mercury or anything like that. And I, you know, as much as I believe, like, we need diesel to power tractors, right, and barges and trains and things like that, but the oil industry has clearly been working to suppress other competing technologies, and it's time to end that suppression. What do you think about that?
Well, certainly there are technologies, and I mean, I've lived off the grid for 24 years, and we've done well, but these are not, quote, renewable technologies either. And that's something that many don't yet understand, even whether it be a solar panel. The closest thing we have is hydro to that. I'm on hydro as well when they let it rain here.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So I have a hydro turbine that's about the size of a car alternator that's a kilometer away from my house. I live on top of a mountain. It's a kilometer away down the bottom of the canyon. That little car alternator size turbine runs our entire house.
Wow.
So,
really? That's
yes.
Amazing. Well, so water has a lot of energy when it's moving, right?
It does. And but not many locations that you can really, it's kind of a sophisticated system. And so it's not realistic for many people to be on that kind of a system. It's a, you know, specialized location, so forth. And other than that, solar panels, limited lifespan, wind turbines in many cases, just a disaster. I mean, there's nothing renewable about a 900 foot tall wind turbine in the long-term sense. So what I would try to point out and what I'm focused on right now is if we don't deal with this, again, biggest hole in the bottom of the boat, nothing else matters. And we are climate engineering operations, again, contaminating every breath we take, facilitating things like the incinerations in LA, Lahaina, Canada 2 years ago. We have disasters happening all over the globe, and we see none of that, Mike, do we? We see none of it. We see political theater every day, theater on Matrix Media. People have no idea how catastrophic conditions are around the globe. About 36 plus countries right now descending into chaos. There's no food on the shelf. And climate engineering, if it sterilizes our soils, and I know that's your background or your arena, it is literally sterilizing soils here in the formerly lush forests of Northern California, Mike. There is no soil decomposition, none. All the duff is just building up on the forest floor because it's not decomposing. And this is what, when you hear these guys talk about fires and what's not being done and why they're burning, they omit everything that's core to the equation. When they talk about trees dying, Mike, you've heard them mention beetles, right? It's just the beetles, right?
Yeah, I've heard that, but clearly that's a cover story, yeah.
It's a symptom. Beetles are simply a symptom of a sick, dead, dying tree, dead, dying forest. And what's the core causal factor with that symptom? It's climate engineering. Because even if with the increasing or changing atmospheric chemistry, if we had uncontaminated precipitation, there are many regions that would actually try to uptake that. The planet would try to respond. It would have the ability to respond. Climate engineering has taken away the planet's ability to respond to other sources of damage. If we don't change that, game over.
Okay. All right. This is really critical. We are living under governments, national governments, federal and state here in the U.S. that are denying that this is a problem, right? I mean, they're contributing, they're creating the problem. We also have, along with this, Dane, then an attack on farms and food. This is happening in Western Europe. It's happening in the Netherlands. It's happening in Ireland, and across the United States. All these direct and indirect attacks on food and farms. What is your take on why do our governments want us to not have food?
Because we're a liability to them. We're a rapidly increasing liability to them. Again, let's go back to Lyndon Johnson, the start of our weekly commercial-free, non-political global alert news update. I've just completed 492 weeks in a row, never missed one. That goes out in the airways too, AM and FM. But the first 30 seconds, I know you're very familiar with this, Mike, but the Lyndon Johnson, 1962, he who controls the weather controls the world, because he who controls the weather controls food supplies, thus controls populations, thus controls the world. So in the case of the farmers, we hope that they will understand that this covert weapon of war, climate engineering, is the single greatest threat they face. And even though other tools are used, Mike, for example, CARB, you know who CARB is, California Air Resources Board, right?
Yep.
Who in California, have you heard that term, CARB?
I've heard it. Yep.
So I spoke in front of CARB that were making the farmers, Mike, they were making farmers change the engines in their vehicles because of the particulate matter it releases. So in that auditorium, as I presented to the CARB board and the farmers, I first made the CARB board admit, and they did admit it, that they're ignoring a source of particulate contamination, climate engineering, that's emitting mathematically perhaps 100,000 times more toxic particles than the farmers' engines. But CARB admitted they don't care. That's not in their jurisdiction. And then I pointed out to the farmers that you're being scapegoated, as you're correctly stating, Mike, that they're being scapegoated for what particulate matter their machines emit as a red herring. They're trying to simply hang that burden on the farmers when that means nothing compared to the overlying issue of climate engineering. But the farmers didn't seem to react from that, and that needs to change. They need to consider that this, what's happening in our sky, is not only sterilizing their fields, not only cutting off precipitation, they're being made to change their equipment, which they can't afford to do. So that's all part of that attack, is it not?
Well, yeah, it is. And it reminds me that farming is so heavily controlled and centralized right now. And, you know, corporate farming and the financial, the loans to farmers, the banks run so much of it right now. And until we have more decentralized food production, you know, how can farmers even be empowered to make their own decisions about what they do, right? The farmers are also victims in all of this.
Oh, they are, certainly. I agree. I hope that they, let me give this example. If your head's on fire, you have to ignore your skin, knee, and your stubbed toe. That's where we're at. For the farmers and all the rest of us, if we don't deal with what's happening in our skies, again, no other cause, no other concern has any meaning, nothing. And mathematically and statistically, we are on an unimaginably short time horizon. And those in power, Mike, let's weave this right back into what's happening in LA right now. That as they realize the population is close to waking up to the fact that the party's over, the party really is over at that point, and the power structure becomes more desperate and dangerous than ever before. And I would argue we're seeing that in LA right now.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So what is California's future if this doesn't get turned around like right now? Where does this go?
It goes the same place as the rest of the world goes. The whole ship goes. Again, we're back to anybody anywhere that thinks that they're immune from what's coming. Good luck with that. You're in the part of the ship that maybe isn't underwater quite yet, but it's coming. And we're all going to end up on the same road that Haiti's on. You see what's happening in Haiti. We don't hear about anything of these anymore. There's always something to distract from the events that are being manipulated around the globe. And even as we're still in the LA fire scenario, and even on Matrix Media now, they're starting to transition back to political theater as of this morning. I mean, this disaster is and it's still in its zenith, and they're already starting to change the subject again. So people need to wake the hell up fast, because we're about out of time. And once the supply chain dominoes start to fall, Mike, it's going to be Mad Max on steroids, and we're close to that. And what I would argue is this, and let me, because I know this is all very hard to try to face or assimilate. And I would argue this from a philosophical standpoint, from a faith standpoint, if we're on the narrow road, if we're doing our best to do our best to make a difference, exercising our will correctly, honorably, virtuously, then we're on the right path, period. And however that story ends, it ends well. But if we all utilize that type of moral fortitude, unyielding to the darkness, and we stand together, we could yet affect profound change even at this late hour.
All right, Dane, there are, throughout history, there are multiple civilizations that have collapsed because of ecological collapse, right? Anasazi Indians, I think, in the southwest of the modern day United States. Easter Island, I think, is a well-known example. There are other examples all over the world. Is it possible that our Western civilization just flat out will destroy itself if we don't change course?
It's not just possible. It is imminent. It's imminent right now on this course. It's a given. So I realize that doesn't fit into most people's reality, and not just Western civilization, the planet as a whole. And those in power are starting to play their cards. It's what I've said at Geoengineering Watch for 15 plus years, 16 now, I believe, that as the severity and immediacy became impossible to hide, they would play big cards, ever bigger cards, and they indeed are. And COVID was one of those, certainly. And we're facing the bird flu scenario now, and they're programming people to accept that as just some natural consequence of nature, which it's anything but, as you know. But they, in any given moment, since we have polymer fibers and graphene in the rain, and we do, our lab tests prove that, both of those biological carrier platforms for biological warfare carry a pathogen from the clouds to the ground. They're in our rain now, right now.
Yeah.
Why would we think they're not going to put something much more lethal in this mix when they feel they're losing control and populations are waking up? Certainly they will. We can wake up enough, and those that are needed to participate in this insanity, just following orders, our military brothers and sisters, if we can wake up them and their families, defense contractor employee families, so that the mechanism for the matrix no longer functions, we have a chance of altering the outcome. I don't mean our problems are over and we all live happily ever after and take Caribbean cruises every year, but I mean we could salvage some part of the planet's life support systems and eliminate the seats of power that are currently propelling us toward certain near-term planetary omnicide.
Wow, planetary omnicide. That's a strong term. You're talking about, I mean, are you saying the whole planet or just the northern hemisphere? And like, what's the real scope of the risk here?
There's one boat and we're all passengers on it. So if we look at all the main foundational factors of the planet's life support systems, the oceans are hurtling toward what's known as Canfield Ocean. That's a lifeless, superheated, stratified, oxygenless dead zone. 500 plus dead zones right now around the planet. Global pelagic fish populations, food fish, down 90% right now. We have crops collapsing around the globe, and I know you know a lot about that. You see that happening. I think Russia just lost half its wheat crop. Morocco lost over half all their staple grain crops. And this is just, those are two little snapshots of the rest of the world. The dominoes are falling, and people can't grow gardens, Mike. We hear from them from all over the globe. Gardens aren't growing. Intense UV is shutting the stomata on the plants. That's the respiratory porch. Yeah. That's why forests don't smell like forest. Atmospheric RH has changed. Radical UV radiation is, they're studying this, shutting their stomata. They don't breathe. They don't absorb carbon. They don't release oxygen. Soils are sterilized. So it's pretty hard to be independent when you can't even grow a garden on your own plot. And when 500-year-old trees that surround me here are dying by the day, we are in a very dark place right now. And you can't just turn off the momentum behind what's happening. So what I would argue is we all need to reprioritize yesterday and focus on stopping the single greatest threat, which is what's happening in our skies, the threat which they could level the playing field in any given day if they choose to. If we can do that, we can focus on other factors at that point.
Okay, Dane, why, deeper meta question, why would human beings destroy the only planet we have, the planet on which those very same people depend and their families depend? And I guess part of the question is there something beyond human influences that is playing a role here?
It's a big universe, Mike, and I certainly don't think that we're alone in it, but I see nothing in all this 20 plus years of nonstop, and I mean nonstop. I've never left my post for 20 plus years, never been on vacation anywhere, done anything but stay at my post and sound the alarm. But I see nothing that I can't attribute to humans behaving very, very poorly. And I would equate it to a cancer, as I've done in the past. Does a cancer intend to kill its host? No. A cancer intends to proliferate unchecked. The host inevitably eventually dies. And we're dealing with a cancer and so many individual cancer cells, people just following orders or just pursuing their own personal pleasures, and they don't want to be bothered with what's happening in the larger picture. That's all, in one form or another, a cancer cell in this larger picture. If we are to take the narrow road, we have to understand we're here for a reason. It's not an accident of fate. We're here for a reason, to make a difference for the better. And there's nothing more gratifying or nothing that produces more solace than that, than knowing when you take your last breath, you're going to be found at your post doing what your maker would want you to do. And I intend to do everything in my power to be at my post till my last breath.
Okay, let me bring in, are you familiar with the researcher John Calhoun and his mouse utopia experiment?
Ever heard of that? Very vaguely.
Okay, let me bring in the description from an AI summarizer. So this was called the Universe 25 experiment. It aimed to create a utopian environment for mice with abundant food and water. So they were given a pretty big physical environment with lots of nesting place. Again, unlimited food and water. They never had to hide from predators or find food. Everything was available for them, okay? Despite these favorable conditions, the population experienced societal collapse due to overcrowding, violence, abnormal behaviors, neglect of offspring became prevalent, like mothers would abandon their baby mice. There was actually there was transgenderism in the mice began to emerge as well. Eventually, the mice were unable to form normal social bonds. They could not engage in courtship or pup rearing. The population declined sharply, and by the 21st month, essentially, there were no survivors. By the 25th month, the population crashed to zero. That's a famous experiment. It's called the Mouse Utopia Experiment. Isn't that wild?
It is. It is. And I think in the case of Easter Island, we have a small snapshot of that too. And for the record, official sources are trying to change the narrative on what happened in Easter Island now. Isn't that interesting? Because they don't want people looking at that parallel of planet Earth right now. Did they not know that cutting down all their trees would mean their own demise? Did they not know that? 16 million palm trees on that island, their primary food source, and they're cutting them down for rollers to build idols, to roll their statues around. I mean, is that not a snapshot of where we're at right now?
And how Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You're right. Your example exactly the same too on the level of mice and men. What's the difference? You know, the behaving like a cancer and not apparently able to see the looming tidal wave of self annihilation over their heads until it hits. It's profound. I ponder this every single day, Mike. I walk through my dying forest and contemplate it, and it's just. I sometimes feel like I landed on the wrong planet. I really do. But that example is also excellent. But I would argue again that we are only responsible for the correct use of our own will. And no matter what anybody else is doing or not doing, if we're exercising our own will correctly, virtuously, honorably, morally, and we are doing our best to do our best, regardless of our individual circumstances, all of us are in different circumstances and capable of doing various degrees of alarm warnings and bringing truth to light. But none of us are in a position to do nothing. None of us. All of us can do something. And if we all stand in that course together, we could still affect change at this late hour.
Well, that brings me to the conclusion of our interview here, which is to ask you exactly that. What are the takeaways, the action items, or maybe the mindset that people need to take away from this in order to, you know, not just survive themselves and navigate this, but how do we affect change so that human civilization has a chance to survive?
Again, you focus on what's in your control and not what isn't. And I'll finish that thought. I just want to mention to you that Mouse Utopia experiment debunked. So I'm not saying I don't believe in everything. What you stated is exactly right. What I'm stating is whenever people see this and see the logical parallel, as you just pointed out, someone in power somewhere will try to cast doubt, right?
True.
Like, yeah. Easter Island, just like this. So the example is an exceptional example, and thank you for bringing it up, and people should understand the parallels. What we can do, again, if any one of us is at the end of the Dimming documentary, the editor who has remained anonymous on that, he stated to the world what I wanted to say so profoundly. And any one of us, oh, there go my dogs. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry if you can hear them howling.
No, that's fine. I don't hear them.
Okay, good. Because the, you know, I love, we have some big dobies up here in the woods, and they are very, dear souls, you know, there, if people were so kind and benevolent, we would have a different world. But at the end of the Dimming, what I tried to say was any one of us, and this is so profoundly true, any one of us could be the final pebble that triggers the landslide of awakening. We should never underestimate the difference we can make if we simply try. And something out there, and I don't pretend to know what did all this, and I don't believe it happened by itself. I can't accept that. I don't accept that. So whatever could do this could do whatever it wants, whatever creator, great spirit. I have a Native American lineage in Choctaw. And if we simply do our part, we don't know how far that ripple will go out. If we throw that pebble in the pond of trying to make a difference, how far will that ripple go out, and what else will it affect? If we all do that, Mike, and if we could force this issue to light, because you can't put this issue in the rearview mirror, can you? You can put COVID in the rearview mirror. You can put 9/11 in the rearview mirror and a lot of other things, but you can't put this issue in the rearview mirror because it's getting bigger and more ominous in front of the windshield every single day, doing more harm every single day. If we could push this to light, fully expose it, reach a critical mass of awareness, it would bring so much to the surface with it, including things like the CV-19 scenario. We could perhaps alter this course, overturn the current paradigm, salvage some part of the planet's remaining life support systems, and try to figure out why the hell it went so wrong in the first place.
Wow. Is it possible that all of that you just said has already happened, and we are the generation of survivors from a different collapsed civilization?
There's a lot I can't know, But I can say that mathematically, statistically, if we stay on this course, it is unlikely that anything will follow this military-industrial complex that we have known. We are headed toward what's called Venus syndrome, and that's not a metaphor. We have triggered about 50 planetary feedback loops right now. Climate engineering, a key part of that, not the only part. We've been bad stewards of the planet. I don't think anybody can argue that. But we have about 50 feedback loops, and let me give an example of one primary one. So as climate engineering is trapping more heat than it deflects, now we have mass methane expulsion, not cow flatulence, as people have been trained to, it's a divisive issue they bring up as if that's our biggest problem is cow flatulence. And that's just, again, designed to polarize people and turn them off. Cutting down forests to raise a cow is a problem. That's not a good idea. Okay. That's destructive. But the methane is not just coming from leaking refineries and so forth, but the methane expulsions and climate engineering, again, trying to mask what's happening in the Arctic, they're making the situation worse, not better. And I encourage your listeners to search Siberian methane craters, look at those craters and understand that's methane exploding into the atmosphere. That's a feedback loop.
Yeah.
The more methane that explodes covers the planet like a layer of glass, trapping more heat than it deflects. Again, climate engineering making that situation worse, not better. And that causes even more methane to release. That's what the Bermuda Triangle situation has been for decades. It's seafloor methane releasing. So that's a feedback loop. Once you trigger it, it feeds on itself. There's about 50 of those in play. So if we stay on this course, we are in for changes few can imagine. And I don't mean, again, decades away. This year, we're going to see some very profound things. And Mike, I forgot to mention, I'll leave it at this. I'm sorry to ramble. Chemical ice nucleation. They are chemically cooling the U.S. to a degree that we have never yet before seen. We're testing the precipitation. We're not guessing. And that's how it can go from 70 or 80 degrees to ice and snow in a day. Chemical ice nucleation.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Just one more weather control technology.
Yes, sir.
In addition to ionization and all the other things.
Yes, sir.
And I just want to say too, wrapping this up, the things that you've talked about over the years are all reflected in the U.S. Patent Office. So anybody who says like, what's your source? Well, just go to the patent office. They're all there. I mean, everything you've talked about, Dane, is patented.
They are there. And and with the chemical cool downs, just search Chinese scientist engineer snowstorm, and you'll find all U.S. matrix media covered it, Popular Science, Fox News, MSNBC. But if you bring it up here as if our government would do it, suddenly you're marginalized. And of course, our government is doing exactly the same thing. That's why the snow is so incredibly slick. It has surfactants in it. That's why there's massive pileups everywhere when these flurries take place. And again, temperature swings literally, in the case of places like Denver, Colorado, 80 degree plus record highs to single digits in snow in less than 24 hours, now becoming the norm.
Wow. All right. Well, Dane, we'll leave it there for today. And I guess we have to pray for humanity, pray for wisdom to enter the consciousness of people so that we can work together to have a future. I want to remind people to check out your website, geoengineeringwatch.org. And any other, what about the dimming? What's the website for the dimming documentary?
It's on the homepage of geoengineeringwatch.org. But if they just search the dimming, and you have to look somewhere besides Google's doing their best to censor everything geoengineeringwatch.org. But the dimming documentary available right on our homepage. And Mike, I just want to say thank you so much for your voice, for all your work, for the common good in so many arenas, and especially in the arena that I am so wholly focused on, climate engineering. You've been a monumental help to us. I thank you, brother. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Dane. I appreciate you and all of your effort. And just stand by. Don't disconnect yet. Let me wrap this up to our audience. Thank you for listening today. This has been another amazing interview here on Brighteon.com. We also post on Rumble and other platforms. Of course, I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. And I agree with what Dane is saying here and his warnings for humanity. We either wise up and grow up and set a new course for humanity, or we don't make it. So, you know, think about what that means. This is way beyond California fires. This is like human civilizations burning down metaphorically if we don't solve this. So thank you for listening. God bless you all, and take care, everybody. I've put together a whole lot of third-party partners with discount codes on this website, rangerdeals.com. Definitely check out this website. You are going to save a bundle on things that you need to be prepared, Be prepared for pandemics. Be prepared for financial collapse. Let me just walk you through some of this. Like right here, 10% off of Petmectin, which is ivermectin labeled for pets. Discount code Ranger. You just click that right there. And it goes to a third-party company. And this icon indicates that they compensate us with product donations that we then donate out to other people. So we kind of have an affiliate relationship here, but they don't pay us cash. They pay us in product that we donate out to other people in need through our church, by the way. So a lot of these, they just gift back to us, to our church, and then we donate that out to people who need it. If you scroll down, you'll see also we've got chlorine dioxide down here somewhere. Where did it go? Here it is, Safrax, 10% off chlorine dioxide. If you don't have a supply of chlorine dioxide, you absolutely need to get some of this and learn about it. And there's the button right there. In addition, to be prepared financially for what's coming, we've got three different sources of gold and silver here on rangerdeals.com. So one of these is called Prepper Bars. You can save 10% off. And that's these guys right here, where you have like breakaway silver pieces. There's like, I'm just kind of showing you, you can break this off, or you can break these off individually. They become 1/10 of an ounce, 1/20 of an ounce, or 1/4 of an ounce, etc. So these prepper bars are really handy. People love those. And then we've got gold backs, which have real physical gold embedded in each gold back. Very divisible form of gold. This has 1/1000th of an ounce of gold. You're actually looking at the gold. It's just flattened out. It's very thin, obviously, at 1/1000th of an ounce. But they have higher denominations. So you can find a link to that here on rangerdeals.com. Or if you just want mainstream, you know, like silver coins, gold coins in the 1 ounce format, you can also find those with our gold and silver supplier here at rangerdeals.com. We've also got 10% off the Trends Journal with Gerald Celente. That's right here. We've got $50 off the de-googled phones at Above Phone. 10% off the RNC supplements. That's vitamin B17 Laetril, which is featured by G. Edward Griffin on his book, World Without Cancer. We've got, you can save money off of heirloom seeds. You can save money on satellite phones here from the satellite phone store, SAT123.com. And on top of that, we've got here, we've got Shield Arms where you can have folding AR-15s, custom Glocks. You can actually save money on high-end firearms here with this link. We've got Ness's Hemp, a CBDA, very high CBDA, a cannabidiolic acid, which has its own efficacy. We've got 10% off holsters with 1791 gun leather, 10% off body armor with Hoplite. You know, you can save money on the Patriot Green products, the compost products, so much more, the portable power stations, solar generators, and here's a discount off of a movie. So much more. We're adding to this all the time, but just go to rangerdeals.com to see our current specials and the discount codes that can save you a bundle on things that can help you get prepared. And these are things that we don't sell in our store. Now, we don't sell ivermectin and gold and silver or things like that, or firearms, obviously. So these are third-party partners that offer things that we don't offer or can't offer ourselves. And we've negotiated these discounts for you. So take advantage of all that at rangerdeals.com. Get prepared. Interesting times ahead, that's for sure. Thanks for watching. Take care.